Well, we want to talk about the Great Depression. And the Great Depression lasts from about 1929 till about 1942. It encompasses the only term for President Hoover and the several terms of three out of four of Franklin Roosevelt. Let's talk about the election of 1828. The election of 1928. In the election of 1928, like we've talked about in our lecture on the 20s, Herbert Hoover is running. He's a self-made millionaire. He's a mining engineer, graduate of Stanford University. And he has a slogan, two cars in every garage and a chicken in every pot. In other words, prosperity. Things were going so good around the time that Hoover is elected that Hoover even predicts the end of poverty in America. Well, the election is in November of 1928, and then by October of 1929, the stock market is fluttering. It is in danger of crashing. And on about October 25th, it was Black Thursday when the market kind of stalls, selling outraces buying, and the market dips significantly. Bankers came in, they reinvested, and they shored up the stock market, but it doesn't last. By the next week, October 29th, 1929, you have Black Tuesday. And that's the day of the stock market crash. You know, contrary to popular myth and popular belief, there were no suicides that day. People had been used to panics. Your grandma had been in a panic. Your mom, your dad had been in a panic. You know, one of the things that hurt, you know, the Vanderbilt family in 1907 was the panic of 1907. So Biltmore House was affected, and like any family was affected as a result of an economic downturn. People had been used to economic downturns. The worst panic, you know, was the panic of 1893. And it took about 3 years to get over that economic downturn. So people were used to panics. After all, there had been a panic of 1819, a panic of 1837, a panic of 1857, a panic of 1873, a panic of 1893, a panic of 1907. There had been a bit of a panic in the 19-teens, and then your big stock market crash of 29. Sure, there had been hiccups along the way, but, you know, people were used to that. But, and that's what makes the Great Depression so great. By 1932, 3 years after the stock market crash, things should have been better. But by 1932, there were 500 banks failing a year. There were one out of every four Americans that were out of work. I mean, this was a clear indication that there wasn't a fix along the way. You know, remember that your presidents in the 1920s believed in the business cycle. They believed in the natural ups and the natural downs, and so, you know, that was very important, okay? So Herbert Hoover is waiting for the business cycle to recorrect itself. But, you know, by this time, 1930-31, he is competing with a governor from New York by the name of Franklin Roosevelt. And Franklin Roosevelt did not believe in what Hoover believed in as a way of combating the Depression, which was something called rugged individualism. In other words, you got to do it yourself. Churches and charities could help, but ultimately relief was up to you. And we're talking about relief from the Depression. Governor of New York, Franklin Roosevelt, has a different approach. And his approach was using the government resources to provide direct relief for the American people, or at least for in his station as governor of New York, for the people of New York. But these are two philosophies going into the 1932 election. Herbert Hoover also believed in something called the Hawley-Smoot Tariff. The Hawley-Smoot Tariff was the largest tariff in American history, the largest tax on foreign goods coming in. And, you know, economists still argue about this. You know, would if we had stayed with Hoover and stayed with the tariffs and not gone to Franklin Roosevelt, not gone to using the government to get us out of the Depression, you know, would things have been different? Would relief from the Depression been quicker? You know, the stock market crash was a symptom of what brought on the Great Depression, but there were causes of the Depression, like overproduction of goods. If you have too much of something, then the price goes down. You know, it's a simple question of supply and demand. There was too much available credit. You know, we mentioned that three out of every four things bought in the 20s was bought on credit. Farmers during the 1920s had overplowed their fields and broke open a new field. They got greedy, and in some cases, and that dropped farm prices. That made it very hard to for farmers to pay their bills. So what you see in the 1930s and later is something called the penny auction, where when the bank came to take your farm, you know, local neighbors would get together and they would pledge not to bet more than a penny at the auction. And so this saved a lot of the neighbors' farms, just simply doing a penny auction. There were high tariffs, and there weren't a lot of banking regulations. There was no banking insurance. There was a gentleman by the name of George Gellis. He had saved $25,000 his whole life. You know, this was his life savings. And after the stock market crashed, as there is something called a run on the bank, and people literally get to the bank to take their money out, George Gellis loses everything. So, unfortunately, there'll be suicides later because Gellis goes back and hangs himself because, you know, his life savings is gone. And I think he stood out in the rain for about a day and a half waiting just to get into the bank to get his life savings. You know, can you imagine? Well, you know, one of the things that happens during the Depression between 1928 and 1932 is there'll be images of soup kitchens and bread lines. There'll be college professors and journalists and teachers that lose their jobs, so they'll be forced to ride the rails. They'll be forced to become hobos if you were a man, or tramps if you were a lady. Jimmy Carter, in his memoir, An Hour Before Daylight, talks about hobos that would visit his house, and they had carved some hobo symbols into his mailbox post. And it must have been a symbol relating to a kind-hearted woman lives here, because Miss Lillian, Jimmy Carter's mama, would always try to give these folks a handout. She understood that they didn't have anything. They were riding the rails. There was a gentleman who said the only time ever in his life that he saw his mama cry was when she had to pawn her wedding ring to pay for them to get some food. Families had to spread out, had to split up. These are some images of the Depression. Again, Hoover's solution to the Great Depression is rugged individualism. What Franklin Roosevelt's solution will be is direct relief. Okay? You know, kind of the end of the line for Herbert Hoover occurs in 1932 before the election, when World War I veterans march on Washington to try to get their bonus early. These are the bonus marchers, and they've been promised a pension in 1945, but, you know, heck, they didn't need it in 1945. They needed the government money in 1932. So they come to Washington. They pledge to stay until Congress deals with a bill to pay them early or not pay them early. And, of course, Congress is broke, and they don't have a lot of money. So Herbert Hoover and the local police chief of Washington, D.C., will order that the bonus marchers be cleared from the city. And they'll use the federal army to do it, and the images and the film and pictures of the new army running the old army out of town with tanks and tear gas and will be just a huge negative judgment against Herbert Hoover. And so, you know, there were stories about Herbert Hoover, how a telegram arrived at the White House and it said, "Dear President Hoover, vote for Roosevelt and make it unanimous." In other words, you are the most hated man in America. It was even said that dogs even took a dislike to Herbert Hoover and his wife. You know, a dog's supposed to be a man's best friend, so if a dog don't like you, something's wrong with you. All these stories, as well as, you know, Hoover's inability to solve the Depression, to get the economy running again, created a really good climate for the Democrats and Franklin Roosevelt promising a New Deal for the American people. You know, really cool thing here. You know, Franklin Roosevelt was the first political candidate in a national election to literally go to the national nominating convention and accept the nomination of his party personally. And, you know, think about the changing times. Hoover appears to not be very, very effective. And then all of a sudden you have Mr. Roosevelt, who everybody knows has something physically wrong with him, but he's still out there trying to make a difference, try to provide direct relief. You know, the only direct relief that Herbert Hoover provided was something called the Reconstruction Finance Corporation. And basically it was a loan to big business. Okay, and big banks. The problem was the prosperity did not travel down to the average American. So it was kind of a little too late in a lot of people's view to combat the Depression. So Franklin Roosevelt is standing on that stage in the summer of 1935, and he says, "I pledge to you, I pledge myself to a New Deal for the American people." And, you know, nobody really knows what that is, but, man, it's not Herbert Hoover, and it's not, you know, the indirect, rugged individualism, prosperity's around the corner, just kind of hang on with me kind of talk. It really seemed to a lot of people that Franklin Roosevelt, with his direct relief as governor of New York, was taking action. And by 1932, with 500 banks failing and one out of every four persons out of work, that was certainly something that people wanted, okay? You know, there's a problem, though, in the 1932 election. You could be elected in November as President of the United States, but you wouldn't take office until March. Now, that's a long time to wait in the midst of an economic depression. So one thing that occurred after this was the 20th Amendment. If you remember, the 20th Amendment is the lame duck amendment. And it's going to shorten the time between election and inauguration. So really cool there, all right, to kind of think about, okay? So, you know, we're going to talk about the New Deal. The New Deal is very famous for its alphabet programs, okay? Arguably the most long-lasting program of the New Deal that we see today is the Social Security Act of 1935, which provided old age and retirement insurance for people. You know, this was a great thing. Frances Perkins, the Secretary of Labor, the first female cabinet secretary ever, will help design Social Security. In 1935, when Social Security came out, there were 16 workers for every retiree. Imagine if you had 16 workers working for you today. That'd be pretty cool. But today it's more of a 1-to-1 ratio. That's how things have changed with the rise of things like the baby boomers. Okay, and we'll talk about the baby boomers after World War II. You had all kinds of alphabet programs. You had the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. You had the SEC, the Security and Exchange Commission, which helped to regulate the stock market. You had the PWA, the Public Works Administration, that helped to build so many government buildings like local courthouses, like bits of Appalachian State University. You had the CWA, the Civil Works Administration. A good many of these programs were done in Roosevelt's first 100 days, his first 100 days in office. In his first inaugural address, he said, quote, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." And programs begin to roll out, like the AAA, the Agricultural Adjustment Act, the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps, the WPA, the Works Progress Administration. And Roosevelt was a great communicator. Remember, Herbert Hoover had just not been a great communicator, But Franklin Roosevelt, through a process called fireside chats, you know, radio addresses to the American people, is going to be a great communicator, okay? In fact, the president that officially gets the name the Great Communicator, Ronald Reagan, you know, Franklin Roosevelt was one of his heroes, okay? Ronald Reagan will begin to be a Democrat, but by the 1960s, he will change and become a Republican, and that'll be a story for us for later. One of the things that Franklin Roosevelt does in that first 100 days is he bails out the banks. He closes the banks. He declares a bank holiday. It really wasn't a bank holiday because a lot of banks had shut down. Theaters were running empty. The best movie in 1932-33 is a movie called King Kong. But, you know, up and through Roosevelt's inauguration, it's running in empty theaters mostly because people don't even have the money to go to the movie. And it only costs a dime to go to the movie. But the bank holiday closes the banks. Franklin Roosevelt asked the federal government to pump about $2 billion into the banking system in only a weekend's time. And then that following Monday, deposits will exceed withdrawals. So this is a great example of Franklin Roosevelt being able to bring confidence back into the economy. Franklin Roosevelt is a big believer in deficit spending, putting people on the government payroll until, you know, an economic depression or an economic calamity is over and done with. You know, a lot of people either really like deficit spending or didn't like deficit spending, and that's something that we're going to continue with in our next lecture. Thanks a bunch.